to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, March 23rd, 2018. A South Sudanese analyst says the U.S. restrictions slapped on South Sudanese entities will hurt the ordinary citizens.
Going after the money and banking system are not going to really hurt these generals or the president as much as those behind them think they will. Because, first of all, some of these monies are in the names of other people.
And Zimbabwe releases a list of companies that transferred millions of dollars out of the country illegally.
But what I'm saying is, let's look at the legal regime that we ourselves have set up for ourselves and see whatever we are suggesting, whatever we are proposing and putting on the table, is it then going to be enforceable in the future?
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A South Sudanese analyst argues that the U.S. restrictions on companies investing in South Sudan's oil industry will hurt the ordinary South Sudanese. Jock Madu Jock says top government officials, influential politicians, and their dependents will not be affected by the trade restrictions imposed on South Sudan by the Trump administration this week.
Going after the money and banking system are not going to really hurt these generals or the president as much as those behind them think they will. Because, first of all, some of these monies are in the names of other people besides the people identified. Maybe their children, maybe their wives, and it is difficult to trace them. But it will affect the people, ordinary people, in the sense that much of the survival of people of South Sudan now, especially those inside South Sudan, depend on diaspora remittances. And if these remittances are going to be restricted in terms of wire transfers and banks going inspecting them, scrutinizing them more closely, it will cause delays and even perhaps rejections of transfers to South Sudan. And that the families that rely on these remittances will have a difficult time surviving the crashing economy. I did not mean the oil companies that were identified the other day. I was not referring to those. The identification of the oil companies as parties of interest for the United States Department of Commerce, I cannot speak to the impact that this listing will have on them.
The discussion about sanctions, you gave an example of Sudan, Libya, but my understanding is when Sudan was under sanctions, the oil industry was not singled out. The gum arabic industry was not singled out. So your argument that these sanctions on South Sudan will hurt the ordinary people, it doesn't really have some basis.
I was referring to the banking system, to the Sentry's report about going after a financial network and after individuals who have stashed money away in foreign countries. So that is that was the basis of my argument in that regard. But with regards to the sanctions on oil, it will still have to be seen what the impact will be with regards to whether they will force South Sudan government to behave better.
You've been following the events in South Sudan. You have all written a lot of papers on issues in South Sudan. Let me ask you one question. How have the South Sudanese benefited from the oil revenue from 2005 to date?
Oh, South Sudanese have been cheated greatly. First of all, the oil industry, like all other extractive industries, are really not job creators as industries because they are technical and require very high skills. Which a lot of South Sudanese don't have. So the industry did not employ South Sudanese. That's one. Secondly, oil is also antithetical to democracy because people do not know where the money comes from. They don't have control over it. They cannot demand transparency over them because it's not like taxpayers' money. So the money comes through channels that are not accessible to the ordinary public. So we don't know how much money actually comes in. What channels through which it comes and what it is used for. So in that way, the money is getting consumed, and the people of South Sudan do not know what the money was used for. Especially that there is no infrastructure in the country, there is no electricity, there is no road, there is no basic services in terms of education and healthcare, and things have gotten worse. And so South Sudanese are not seeing the cash, and they are not seeing the infrastructural development that they expected their country to have since South Sudan became independent as a middle-income country.
And
but
so,
nothing to show for the money at the moment.
And if, let me use your word, if there's nothing to show for the money, don't you think it's wise to trace the money?
Indeed. It is important to trace the money, but the way it is being done is going to squeeze the people who rely on remittances. There is an allegation that the sanction will be a type of smart sanction, but there is really nothing smart about this sanction if you are not going to find the names of these people on bank accounts. You will find some, but not a lot to justify squeezing the ordinary public.
If you're not a supporter of sanctions, what other diplomatic pressure would you prescribe for the situation in South Sudan?
Right now, the only sanction or the only pressures that can be brought to bear on the government of South Sudan is for the U.S. not to deny itself an eye on South Sudan and to engage. Because what has happened now is that the government has simply become averse to pressure, because they are saying to the U.S. and the Troika, if you have already withdrawn your funding and you are pressuring us diplomatically, what reason is there anymore for us to talk to you? So what sanctions do is that they cut off that channel of pressure, because they drive the government targeted with these sanctions to become rogue. And so I would say, don't close the channel, diplomatic channel, in calculation that this will force some kind of positive action from Juba.
That's Jock Madur Jock, founder and director of the Juba-based SAD Institute. He was speaking to me from the Kenyan coastal town of Mombasa this past hour. This week, Zimbabwe's president released a list of companies said to have illegally transferred hundreds of millions of dollars out of Zimbabwe. The government is threatening to prosecute the companies unless they bring the money home. Lawyers and the opposition say the president's tactic is a publicity one that lacks legal authority. Sebastian Mwofu has this report for VOA from Harare.
In hopes of reviving the ailing economy, Zimbabwe's government has set out to repatriate as much as $1.4 billion it says was transferred abroad illegally in recent years. This week, President Emmerson Mnangagwa released a list of companies that have not cooperated with his campaign. He said more than $820 million has yet to be returned, despite him extending a three-month amnesty period that began in December. Tendai Biti is an opposition leader and Zimbabwe's former finance minister. He says the issue of externalizing funds ended in 2009 when Zimbabwe abandoned its worthless dollar and adopted a multi-currency system, which is largely dominated by the U.S. dollar.
The U.S. dollar is legal tender in this country. Now, when you talk of externalization, you are talking of getting foreign currency, i.e. money which is not the legal tender of that country outside Zimbabwe. The key solution and the key problem to our economy is not money that has been externalized in inverted commas. It's because we're not producing. And when we're not exporting, we cannot earn foreign currency receipts.
But Terence Mukupe, Zimbabwe's Deputy Minister of Finance and Economic Development, says repatriating money is key to reviving Zimbabwe's long struggling economy.
That $800 million that's on the list, it's real. Imagine having $800 million coming back onto the nostril accounts. It makes a huge difference. You're talking of a quarter of our import bill. So if we're able to bring back $1 billion, guess what? The chance for the ordinary person, it changes the lives of people.
Agents Gumbo, a lawyer, said the government must find a way to encourage companies to return their funds besides threatening them with lawsuits.
I agree with him that externalization is part of the problem that we have as a nation. But what I'm saying is, let's look at the legal regime that we ourselves have set up for ourselves and see whatever we are suggesting, whatever we are proposing and putting on the table, is it then going to be enforceable in the future?
He agreed with BET that since Zimbabwe adopted the US dollar as part of its currency, externalization charges might not stick in court should President Emmerson Mnangagwa's government decide to prosecute. Gumbo also noted that some of the companies listed as having externalized money were struggling to have their customers pay them. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
The return of more than 100 schoolgirls abducted from the Nigerian town of Dapchi by the Boko Haram extremist sect is raising concern about the religious divide in Nigeria. One Dapchi girl still in captivity is a Christian. Nigerian Christians are demanding her immediate return. Chika Odua reports from Dakar.
Across Nigeria, people are praying for the return of Leah Sharibu. The 15-year-old Sharibu was among more than 100 schoolgirls who were abducted by a Boko Haram faction more than a month ago in the rural town of Dapchi in northeastern Nigeria. Earlier this week, Boko Haram returned nearly all of the girls, with the exception of five who died along the way to Dapchi, and Leah. VOA spoke to Leah's father, Nathan Sharibu.
They told her to convince to Muslim, and she said she will not convince to Muslim. Hence, she is the only Christian among them.
He said he is proud of his daughter for maintaining her Christian identity in the face of the insurgents. Sources in Dapchi told VOA that according to the returned girls, Leah was left behind. They said Boko Haram had told her to wear hijab, but she refused. When Boko Haram returned the Dapchi girls on Wednesday, Leah's mother fainted when she realized her daughter was not among them. Leah's mother is still in shock, too traumatized to speak. She was rushed to the hospital, according to her husband, Nathan Sharibu. He said they are all grieving Leah, but are happy to know that she is still alive.
Very quiet. Leah is very quiet. She doesn't talk much. But she used to play with her junior ones. Yes, she likes school very, very much. And she likes church activities very, very much.
Christian groups are demanding for the Nigerian government to secure Leah's return. Some people suspect that the federal government is discriminating along religious lines. Nigeria is divided nearly 50-50 between Muslims and Christians. Religious biases have often led to deadly sectarian strife across the country, and some worry that this week's events may do more harm. Emmanuel Ogebe is a U.S.-based Nigerian lawyer and rights activist.
Sadly, this particular incident has basically twisted the knife of division in Nigeria a little more. The terrorists just really ruined things by hitting Leah back. That wasn't necessary. They claim, and it is often said that there's no compulsion in Islam, and for that reason alone, they should have let her go. So this is not good.
Boko Haram is divided into two competing factions, and analysts believe the one that abducted the Dapchi girls is the relatively less violent one, led by Abu Musab al-Barnawi. When militants released the Dapchi girls Wednesday morning, they stayed to preach to the community for about 20 minutes. They told them not to allow their daughters to return to the government school where Christian and Muslim children study together. There is also an Islamic school in Dapchi, which the insurgents left untouched when they kidnapped the girls in February. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari is currently meeting with some of the returned Dapchi schoolgirls in the capital, Abuja. Through a press statement, he vowed to rescue Leah Sharibu and said he is fully aware of his duty to protect all Nigerians, irrespective of their religious affiliation. Chika Odua, for VOA News, Dakar.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, residents of Jonglei protest new taxes. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
is there anything your best friend does that annoys you?
I'm one person who doesn't even have a best friend. You know, dealing with ladies sometimes is a bit challenging because of our emotions and all that. So what somebody would do that would annoy me is being taken for granted.
When they try not to understand my own view of issues.
Yes, of course, like surprises during my birthday. He or she can just surprise me with a gift.
Yes, because they pick my things, but I don't like that.
I think in the class of best friends, I'm the most annoying one.
She could tell you, oh, I'm on my way to this place, but she's still at home, and you wait and wait, and you'll be very tired of waiting for her.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Jonglei state lawmakers have approved a social tax law to raise money for development. The new law requires everyone aged 18 to 65 years to pay at least 300 South Sudanese pounds, which is equivalent to $1 a year, for development activities in Jonglei state. Some Bor residents say since they are jobless, they cannot afford to pay the tax. Dengai Deng has this report for VOA from Bor.
Manyanga Wol, Speaker of the Jonglei State Legislative Assembly, says 15 out of 24 lawmakers voted in favor of the tax during Wednesday sessions.
One person is supposed to pay £300 a year, and the people who are supposed to pay are from the age of 18 to the age of 65. What they are supposed to pay, because there's no people who do not pay tax, and then at the same time receive services. So if you want services, you pay for it.
Awol says paying taxes to the government is a duty of every community member and insists that adults must pay the new tax regardless of being employed or not.
Our people, they have money, because if a cock can cost about £2,000, then how can a person say that I don't have? The fact that you don't have cock in your house is your mistake. It is not the mistake of anybody else. If you want money and you want to be saved, then you have to do something.
Lawmaker Kwal Bola Yom says the social service tax will help the government raise money to refer roads, provide medical care and other basic needs of the community.
We encourage the sheep, we encourage the whole population to pay these taxes, because without taxes, we cannot be able to give services to the people.
Bo resident Chola Lier claims most people in the state are unemployed and cannot afford to pay the tax.
Each one of us is struggling to survive, where to survive. But even the government employees, they are struggling for their whole lives. We are not working anywhere, and I'm not supporting that one.
Another resident, Diubul, says if the new tax is enforced, it will increase the suffering of local residents. He says South Sudanese are yearning for stability.
Let them first bring peace so that we should be able to work, and then after that, we will be able to pay their taxes so that they can develop our young nation. So this is what I'm feeling to our government. So let them bring peace, and then development will go after the peace has come.
Residents like Bull say state and national officials should focus on restoring peace and instability in the country instead of enacting laws that could worsen the economic hardships of citizens who are already struggling due to the economic and political crisis in the country. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
Still on matters of tax, traders in Yei Town are accusing county and state officials of imposing multiple taxes on their businesses, making it all but impossible to earn profit. Yei River County Commissioner says local officials are working to address the matter. Daniel Friday Martin has the story for VOA from Yei Town.
Both retail and wholesale traders in Yei River County say authorities are imposing too many taxes on their businesses, making it impossible for traders to earn a profit. Edward Luber is a local trader and chairman of the business community in Yei River County. He says the government has imposed more than 12 different taxes on traders, forcing some of the traders to close their businesses. Speaking in Arabic, Luba says on top of paying state and local taxes, security agents are also charging fees.
Some of the traders say when a truck carrying goods arrives from either Juba or Uganda, all the government agencies in charge of collecting taxes and fees, including security organs, rate collectors from the town council and the county demand for taxes from the same truck, and some of them collect taxes without issuing receipts.
Ross Hanan is a businesswoman in Yei Town. She says county authorities are responsible for creating a good business environment.
We are not happy as a lot of tax going on in different ways of which we are not happy really at all, because we really want the government to help us. Let the business taxes just be in a one-way use, but you pay money that there are other people who are doing patrol at night, but still you see your things are stolen. Really, we are just appealing the government to help us so that the business will go well, and then also that we provide the needed services to the people outside there.
Yaqub Said is a Sudanese national who operates a barber shop in Yei Town. Speaking in Arabic, Said says a tax official once asked him to pay $100 every month. He claims they harass him to pay the taxes in U.S. dollars.
A man having a salon saving people's hair at 60 South Sudanese pound is expected to pay $100, and yet he takes many months to get that $100. If you do not pay, you could face imprisonment. This is really very difficult for us. The business sector is a pillar for development, and we really need protection and clear policies for development.
Yaqub says many traders from Sudan and other neighboring countries are no longer interested in investing in Yei River County due to the unfavorable business climate created by the government. Scopas Gale, the Yei River County Executive Director, denies county authorities collect extra taxes from traders. Gale says government officials will investigate the traders' concerns.
We have national government, we have state government, and the local government, which we are part of it. And we, as a local government, we are only concerned with our taxes, the taxes which are mandated to us as per Local Government Act of 2009. We are collecting sales tax and things to do with the renewal of lands, things to do with organization of the market. These are all falls under our jurisdiction. Some of these grievances that they have ironed out, we are going to correct them.
Yei River State Police Commissioner Yuwasalo Jankamba says his office is not aware of security operatives collecting taxes from business owners in Yei Town.
That is not true, because we, the security organs, all including even the police, our mandate is actually to, you know, protect lives and properties of the people. We are not actually mandated to collect any tax. For the roadblocks, as I have said, that soon will be all removed out when the security situation becomes accessible on the roads.
Yei River County Commissioner Justin Lokonga Kenyi says state authorities are sharing information to avoid double taxation. He says the Yei River County government has deployed police officers in all market centers to protect traders and arrest illegal tax collectors.
All this will be sorted out, but what I know is that we have regulations. Nobody is authorized to collect taxes. It is the county authority that collects taxes.
Well, we promise to protect them. We have deployed police in the markets.
The traders warned that unless the state government acts to remove the multiple taxes, businesses will continue to increase prices and consumers will continue to suffer from the skyrocketing prices in the market. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday Martin in Yei.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. South Sudanese analyst Jock Madot Jock
says at the Juba-based Institute says that new U.S. restrictions announced this week on companies and government entities invested in South Sudan's oil industry will hurt ordinary South Sudanese, but not top government officials, politicians, and their dependents. He says that's because much of the money connected to top officials is in the hands of their families in other countries, which cannot be easily traced. But people who live in South Sudan, he says, will be hurt in terms of wire transfers and remittances. This week, Zimbabwe's president released a list of companies said to have illegally transferred hundreds of millions of dollars out of that country. The government's threatening to prosecute the companies unless they bring the money home. Lawyers and the opposition said the president's tactic is a publicity stunt which lacks legal authority. In a bid to revive ailing economy of Zimbabwe's government, it has set out to repatriate as much as $1.4 billion that it says was transferred abroad illegally in recent years. And finally, lawmakers in Jonglei State have passed a social tax law to raise money for development. The new law forces everyone aged 18 to 65 to pay at least 300 South Sudanese pounds, that's about $1 per year, for development activities. But some Bor residents say that since they don't have a job, they cannot afford to pay that tax. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Mama Ama by Colonel Mido, who sings in his native Kakwa language. This one goes out to our listeners of Spirit FM 99.9 in Yei, Lanya, Morobo, and Kajokeji. Listening to Colonel Mido with the song Mama Ama. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. We want to know what you think about this show. Our email is southsudan@voanews.com. You can also find us on Facebook. Our Facebook name is South Sudan in Focus. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.